are you missing the boat in your marketing? Where are the leaks in the ship, so to speak? What are the negative vibes that your team in your office is putting out? Negative vibes that you don't know about and therefore can't fix. Fasten your seatbelts. You're about to go on an exciting 90-minute journey where you'll find many of the answers. And the things you'll learn, the techniques and methods, are not hard to implement. Many are dead easy. My name's Richard Geller, and I've consulted with thousands of dentists since 1990. I wrote the best-selling classic on case acceptance, now in its third edition, and I'm founder of CasesForDentists.com and write regularly for major dental magazines on the subjects of dental marketing. In today's recessionary times, it is vital that you stop the leaks, that you stop losing new patients simply because you're unaware of the simple methods and systems that you're going to discover in a moment. I'm very, very pleased to present a recent pioneering discussion between me and practice consultant Kathy Larson.
If you, as the dentist, you're at the chair, you've got you're up to your elbows in saliva, and you know it's a typical, very difficult day with you on roller skates from one operatory to another, you're not going to know how many people called and were lost because your front desk was harried and impatient and they had a very tough time, and maybe someone called and they didn't get what they wanted to hear. They didn't start to like your front desk right away. They didn't have a great feeling. You're not going to know how many people have been lost because of negative interactions in the office, negative interactions and relationships in the office. And it's nobody's fault. It's just that nobody had, to my knowledge, has ever gotten any training in how to eliminate these negative interactions and how to turn the team into a much more positive relationship thing that will convert better. And it's kind of why I wanted to have Kathy with us today. I want, because Kathy is amazing. She has more depth of really going into a number of offices in real depth and really understanding them and helping them remove those barriers, increase those positive relationships, and in a tangible way, help you and your team convert better than anybody I've met. And so I want to welcome Kathy to our program.
Well, thank you, Richard, and welcome to everybody listening today.
We have a lot to cover here, Kathy, and I want to first ask you about why you're qualified to, you know, help us with this topic. What is it in your experience I've alluded to that really makes you a great person to help somebody with raising their conversion rate on the first call, on the first visit?
Well, I have a deep, dark past. I was an entrepreneur beginning when I was 20. I was compelled due to life situations to sell myself and to sell my product. And I bumbled along. That was how I fed myself in the ski towns of Colorado. I moved on to own my own restaurants. By the time I was 30, I had two kids under, this is scary, two kids under the age of three. I owned four restaurants and had 100 team members. If you don't think that learning by fire with 100 people in four different locations is tough, then you're probably not from this planet. I learned a lot about conflict, and I love to say I learned how to do absolutely everything wrong. I had the good fortune when I sold the restaurants, believe it or not, of recruiting myself into Mary Kay Cosmetics. Now, right now, those of you that are listening, saying, "Well, what on earth? That, you know, was she doing talking to dentists?" Don't be afraid. I've worked with dentists for the past decade, and I've dealt with hundreds of team members, both on-site, off-site. I've got a lot of experience, of course, working with you. But I want to go back to the Mary Kay experience, because I know what it's like, very much so, to tell someone what you do and have them step back 2 inches. I know what it's like for people to operate in the realm of the unknown. Just as you right now are thinking, well, how does Mary Kay relate to what we're going to be discussing today beyond cosmetics and these pushy salespeople? Well, my experience was that I grew my organization to 350 people within about 2 years. We were a multi-million dollar sales machine throughout the country. And the unique part of that was my organization marketed their product through, number one, word of mouth. And number two, these were not employees. These were all independent contractors. For me to be able to build an organization without higher firepower, without being in their face every day, because without territories, you could be a sales consultant in New York, I'm in Colorado, I moved to Florida, I moved to California, so I didn't have the face-to-face contact, and yet my people were able to be trained by me, and they became very, very successful. It was after that career, about 10 years, that I had the opportunity to step in the place that I loved as a result of the Mary Kay experience, which was team building, really working from the point of relationship to get what you want out of life personally and to be able to get that cash in your bank account so that you can continue to develop that quality of life. So that's where I've been. That's what I've been up to.
From your experience, Kathy, what's the major reason that offices aren't converting a new patient, somebody who calls, why they're not converting to a patient?
The number one reason is we don't ask them to.
I don't understand.
Well, it's going to sound kind of crazy to some people, but the problem is that the person that presents your treatment plan, and I'm going to talk about the initial phone call and really selling yourself initially, but I want to go to that all-important point. I want to start at the end.
Okay.
The person that presents your treatment plan wants to be liked, but it's contradictory to the patient when the patient doesn't know how to get started. She feels let down and confused, not relieved that she's been to the dentist, and at the start of the call, not relieved that she finally picked up the phone call to make the appointment. But at the end of the appointment, she feels confused because she got out of your practice without spending money. It's really important from the first contact that we understand what the patient is really saying. She's saying, you need to know what I'm thinking before you meet me, because you need me to come back after this visit. I want you to make my time with you not only informative, but also delightful. I came to you for a very specific reason. I want you to fix my smile. You need to do whatever it takes to make that happen. Every practice that wants to grow needs to listen to these silent requests that every patient makes every day, even existing patients. They wouldn't be calling, they wouldn't be in front of you unless they wanted you to do something. I mean, let's face it, no one's got a harness around their neck dragging them to see you. There are certainly things, well, I should, I've done it growing up my whole life, I had to go to the dentist periodically, there are those things, but those are pretty weak motivators. So we need to, from the first phone call all the way to the end of the phone call, convince the patient that we do have their best interest and that we hear them, that we know they took their time to call.
I've never heard you said that something about delight or delighted and dentistry. I never heard ever those two connected ever with people. I know people are delighted after they've got a veneers or cosmetic work, or sometimes they're delighted or relieved that they got something done. But you also had said that there are some silent things that are going on here, and that one of the issues was the desire of the presenter to be liked. How is that a problem, or how is that a challenge for doing a case, getting case acceptance?
Well, again, there's this point of trust, this tipping point for everybody where you are engaged in a relationship beyond what the service is. I think we all have, you know, that experience every day. We pick out favorite checkers at the supermarket. We make friends with the dry cleaner person. We know the guy at the quick stop that's going to sell us our coffee on the way to work. These people make impressions in very subliminal ways to us, impressions on us. What's the proper grammar there? But they make impressions that we can hang on to, that we even can relate to other people about. We need to do that anytime we're selling anything, an idea, a concept, a product, and, of course, dentistry is a product. If I can connect the dots to make the person in front of me, the potential patient, relate to me, I'm going to get better results. And there's really some things that have to happen in order for that to happen. There's, you know, again, I mentioned, I know what it's like to have people step back 2 inches when you tell them what you do. Even at this point in my life, interestingly enough, I say, you know, who do you work with? People ask me, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm a leadership and business coach. I primarily work with dentists and their teams, maximizing the effectiveness and the practice and really learning how to hang out and have a good time with one another. And they go, why dentists? People are really uneducated in the field of dentistry. And, of course, as we all know, they probably had bad history. Dentistry has just changed so much, even in the decade that I've been working with dentists. So there's great inroads in this becoming a people science. And as you say, as a result of cosmetics, and, you know, we all want to thank Julia Roberts for that. There is a place, however, that if we can connect with health and relationship, that this is a place where the patient is going to be taken care of, be comfortable, have friends, and most importantly, the patient is going to be heard.
So how would that translate? Let's assume that somebody needs a three-unit bridge, let's just say. How would that translate in a case presentation, what you said?
Well, the most important thing that has to happen here is this person has to hear me say, I'm the person that's presenting, has to hear.
Hello?
I apologize, everyone. There was a moment of disconnect there for me on the phone.
Go ahead.
You need to have your patient connect with your message. That's where I was. And the message is really simple. If you do this, you will feel better and you'll be happier. That's what you want, and that's what we want. That has to be the underlying message. There has to be a way that you can convey that you know, again, silent request, the patient is there because they want to feel better. They don't know exactly how that's going to happen. They don't even know what it is that you're going to offer. But if you begin that right from the start, and there's many things you can do on stage. I like to think of the doctor as a movie director, okay, when we get to the practice. If the director doesn't use the proper staging, if the director doesn't use the proper special effects or have the right actors or have the right script, then no one's going to make anything happen. There ain't going to be any movie that's worth seeing. You can't even get started. You can't begin to communicate with the audience. You've got to have all these pieces together. So the job here is to get your emotional connection into the world. Emotional connections, that's the strongest branding that there is. We all have our favorite things. We watch TV. Gosh, I think of Apple, what the job that they've done in the past few years of creating emotional connections. Everybody wants to be that happy little gray figure dancing around the screen with their iPod. You know, it doesn't matter what age you are. That gets your attention. It either delights you, you smile, you get curious. There are many things that evokes many tears of emotion. And that's what we want. In dentistry, just as everywhere else, you got to make me want to buy from you. And as important, your team needs to want to sell to me. I had a really great experience a few years ago where this was really brought home to me in the early days of LASIK. And this is, of course, eye repair. And my LASIK experience was just marvelous. I mean, just absolutely marvelous. So surprised. Talk about something being nervous. We know a whole lot of somebody being nervous. We know a whole lot more, and even the procedure has improved and greatly changed since I had it. But the bottom line is I don't want to wear glasses anymore. I spent a lot of time speaking to people in front of audiences, and I was, you know, distance. I was putting glasses on and off, and I was losing them. As a matter of fact, if it was a seminar, a small training seminar where people were using their laptops, I would always announce at the beginning, now part of your job as I wander around the room is to keep track of my glasses because I'm going to lose them 6 times before this day is over and this class is over. So I wanted to eliminate that. So I went for my LASIK appointment and it was a fact-finding appointment. I didn't know if this treatment was, it was just a fact-finding appointment. Well, from the time I set the appointment, the confirmation process that I had, the walkthrough in the practice, the flow from person to person to person, So sitting down at the desk, signing on for the, not only the appointment, but having fully paid for my treatment by the time I get out of there was just an amazing process. And I have to tell you, it was delightful and pain-free. I learned a lot.
So how did they do it? How would you take those, and how did you take what you learned there and translate it to the dentist?
Well, the key was that they were consistent. They were consistent from their greeting to their farewell. There was a tempo to the presentation. There was a consistency in personality, in attire, the way, the flow of the office, very easy. So I walked in, walked back for my preliminary exam, met the doctor. All the work essentially was done by the time I met the doctor. I had been told, gee, I'm going to love it. Well, how will it feel? I had been asked, how will it feel to get rid of your glasses? And when I had the exam from the assistant, I was told immediately, wow, congratulations, you are a candidate for LASIK. We can promise you that your vision is going to be, giving me the numbers, giving me exactly the way that it was going to, where I was going to end up. So my little head was spinning and my heart was excited. And I met the doctor and he said, yes, I'm verifying everything in the exam. The next thing that's going to happen is that Susie's going to come back in and tell you exactly what's going to happen in the procedure. I saw the doctor for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. I was instructed on what was going to happen, how long it was going to take, how soon I could make it happen, and then introduced to Susie. Sat down with Susie. Susie said, well, this is great. Let's look at the calendar. Looked at the calendar, scheduled me, then presented me with financial arrangements, got my credit card, and I was on my way. And that's the way it works. And I was delighted, I have to tell you. Wow, not only was that slick, looking at it from a professional standpoint, I said, I know I'm going to be taken care of here. This is so efficient, and that's really what I wanted.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the first contact that someone is going to have with the front desk, because I think that critically important. I mentioned that the doctor is not usually going to even know how well or poorly their front desk is doing. And so maybe there's some things we can talk about, specific techniques for our listeners to take away on helping their front desk do better with the first phone call.
Okay, this is great, because really I feel the number one, in my experience, has been the number one stumbling block is that too much information is offered at the first phone call. A lot of practices, and I'm going to use the, when I refer to me, I'm going to be the patient.
Okay.
I feel that working with dentists, I often say that, and designing procedures and new protocols, that I always say, I'm the patient advocate here. I really want you to succeed, but the best thing that I can do for your success is I need to be the patient. I need to stand in that position and tell you what is happening there.
Okay.
And the reason for that is a lot of practices think the most important thing to show me, the patient, is how smart they are first. Your goal is to make me want to follow through and feel good about it, period. End of story. However you do that, that's the most important part. It is not to prove the worth of your credential.
Okay, so the big mistake is...
That works for dental society meeting, but it doesn't necessarily work at a first phone call for me, the patient, to endear myself to you. It really doesn't.
So
you're asking me a question.
You're finding, Kathy, that on a lot of the first calls, that the front desk is making the patient feel not so good because they're giving too much information away?
Well, not so good. I don't want to say that necessarily. I think they're missing an opportunity by presenting the wrong information first. Okay?
Okay.
The first thing that has to happen is you got to find out about me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, I know you're a dentist. I'm assuming that there's credentials and it's hanging on the wall. That's really all I need to know in order to make the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all I need to know. And so at that point in time, what's important now is we immediately get into relationship building. Your job is, again, your job is to make me want to follow through. You want to make me your partner because, again, you want me to show up. You need to tell me what to expect beyond You will see the doctor. We will take x-rays. It will cost you. We are the number one practice in the area. I probably know all those things already. So at this point, the sooner that you can start talking to me and about my needs, you're going to have better results. At this point, I like to remind the doctors, now don't worry, okay? You're going to have the upper hand once I'm in your practice. You're going to have more power then, okay? You're going to have the power to influence my decision whether or not to proceed with treatment when we're face-to-face. But you need to set the stage at the first phone call.
What are the kinds of things that the front desk should ask, and should they be doing more listening or more talking?
Well, the number one thing is you need to, again, keep it simple. You need to have a script that includes only the questions you need answered. There's a lot going on about scripting out there in practices all over the place. You know, the written phone slip is really important framework, but very often I find it doesn't get the right information in the simplest manner. Here's what you want to gather. Number one, you want to get the patient's name, address, phone, and email.
Okay.
Email. Everybody's got email.
Right.
You want to use this email to your advantage. And I'm sure you can speak to that, Richard.
Well, the nice thing about email is it's personal. It goes right to the patient's email box, whereas a lot of other things like mail will end up in the house. It'll be in the general mail, and a lot of people won't even get it. So email is very important.
Yeah, I'm a big one, and I'll talk a little bit about confirming the appointment, but I'm a big one for multi-pronged approach, and I'll tell you why. There's many ways that we can reach that emotional pinnacle with the patient. Again, that's what we're always looking for. We're looking for that connection, that precipice where I want the patient to reach out their hand and have me take them along through this process.
Okay.
To be able to trust me.
So we've got.
So I'll talk a lot more about that confirmation process.
Okay.
Can we go back to the.
Let's go back
call?
And continue. We've gotten that information. Okay.
All right. Name, address, phone, email. Can you tell me more about why you're calling? Okay. You got to find out. Why are they calling? Are they in pain? They just moved to the area. They were referred by. A lot of things are going to come out right there in that commentary. You also want to know how long they have lived in your community. Again, getting back to greet them to the community. Have they been there? Is this a situation where they're changing dentists? Is this a situation where they haven't had dental care? Now, be really careful here because you don't want to make me defensive. You really, at that point in time, don't need to know that second part. If you've lived there for a while, at that phone call, you really don't need to know I'm abandoning my dentist.
Right.
You really don't need to know at that phone call if I haven't had dental care in a while.
Right.
If I'm phobic, you will know. I will tell you I've lived here for a long time, but I am so freaked out about going to the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
But be careful with asking those questions because you can make me defensive. You
okay.
don't want to lure me into a situation where I have to talk ill of my doctor that I've had for several years and I'm changing my mind or I liked your TV ad or whatever. If that information is prominent, important, I will volunteer that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking for clues here. How long have you lived here? Then the next question is really important, and this is a really hard one to get to sometimes. Oh, you've lived here 5 years. Can you tell me a bit more about yourself? Okay, tell me about you. And this is really a key part. I want to hear how you present your information. There are some personality cues that are really, really critical. Personality cues. I'm going to be talking. And now probably is a good time. I'm going to be talking about different personality types. Now, before the listeners reel back and say, oh, you know, I've been for trainings and I'm familiar with DISC or I've done Myers-Briggs, just hear me out. Because you can learn a lot with the question, can you tell me more about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
The D personality, if we're going to use the DISC premise, and I'm available. People email me, or I'm sure we'll be talking about my contact. I can talk more to you individually if this isn't familiar to you, but I think for most people, they're familiar with the four aspects of personality presented by a DISC profile. There's the dominant, the influencing, the steadfast, and the compliant. Now, the dominant person at their type A personality at the strong end, of course, we think of as a Donald Trump, you know, that high D. We often hear that out in the field. Well, a D personality, when you ask them, tell me about yourself, they're going to tell you about where they work. They may tell you, they're going to talk primarily about their achievements. They relate largely to the broader community and their place in it. This is a place where they feel most in control. And so that would be your D personality. This personality wants you to stick to it. They want to know, how do I get an appointment? What's going to be involved? What's it going to cost me? How long is it going to take? You might not address all of those in the call, but you've really got to understand that that's this personality. If they are working, time is very valuable to them. So be very efficient in this phone call. Now, the I personality is the influencing personality. Think Goldie Hawn. Think cheerleader in the classic model here. But also, influencing personality is very engaging, and relationships and people contact are very important. This person likes fun. It's going to be really important for them to like you. They're going to be a little less concerned, maybe a lot less concerned, about how efficient you are. They may even be coming to your practice. Sometimes they can really be a problem because they love to talk. I hear this about I personalities that actually will come earlier because they want to talk to the front desk and visit and talk to them about kids and, you know, what's going on and what they did Friday night, where their last vacation was. That's your I personality. So, again, letting yourself shine and being a friend once that person says that, starts talking about that. And S personality, the steadfast, you say, tell me about yourself. They're probably going to say, well, I have three children. I've lived here for several years. They're going to be talking about the things that they are tethered to and that they value, that they like consistency in their life. And S, steadfast, is also slow to change. So there's a selling component here that I can talk about more later, too, that is really critical. And S sometimes locks their arms and looks like a D, will look at you very seriously, but they're really slow processors. Again, slow to change. Once they decide, they're going to be loyal. This is a person that's going to be on time for the appointment. It's not going to, just won't cancel appointment. They've got you in the book. And a C personality, ask them to tell me more about yourself. Their response would be, what do you want to know? They really like specifics. They like details. You will have to spend time, and when you are presenting treatment, you will have to go line by line, with this person. Concepts, broader concepts are really not the hot point for this personality. So again, can you tell me more about yourself? A D is going to tell you about their work. An I personality is going to tell you about their friends. An S personality is going to tell you about their family and their longevity. And a C personality is going to ask you specifically, what do you want to know? Really important to find that information out at the initial phone call.
Are there things now at this point that can be done quickly that will raise the chances of a successful appointment and eliminate failed visits?
Well, the number, again, listening for these personality types, if I'm a D personality to prevent the failed appointment, you're going to say to me, oh, we really value your time. We promise you that you're going to get in and you're going to get out on time, and you'll know exactly what it is that we advise you. We will provide you with exactly what it is that you want. That's going to be really important for a D. That's the information you need to say. And I personality, quite honestly, we can't wait to meet you. We just can't wait to meet you. And S personality, you want to be sure, again, that you just say, we will be here for you. You may have questions between now and your appointment. We are here for you. Feel free to call. I will be here looking forward to meeting you. This person is really going to want a personal advocate.
That's a real communicator person. They really want to know there's more interactions, that kind of person. They're big on communication.
Yes. That's right. Big on that. They want to know, I'm Sally, I'm on the phone now, and I will be here when you arrive. That's going to be really important. And a C personality, again, linear details, what's going to go on, how I'm going to be in contact with you. I will give you any information that you need. You're going to be receiving this in the mail from me for confirmation. I'll also be phoning you and emailing you so that you can be sure to keep this in your calendar. We want to serve you in the way that is most comfortable for you. So, again, you've taken care of a lot of detail. So that has to happen.
Okay. So are we ready? Is that it for the first call? Is that, I know there's tons more, but in the interest of time, is there more, or should we move on to the first visit?
I think that those pretty much are the basics. Again, keep your questions simple and be willing, teach your people to listen. The answers to that question, can you tell me a bit more about yourself? Teach your people to listen for that.
I really get that now. That's really interesting. Now, we're talking about first visit. The prospective patient has his or her hand on the knob of the door, and they open the door to the office. What should be happening now?
Well, it's really key here. Small details speak volume. We get here into not only who greets the person and how soon that happens, but what my scanning is, what I'm seeing when I'm opening the door. I love you talking about, is it Grottman's work that you were talking about?
Grottman, yeah, G-O-T-T, yes.
Grottman. I had seen this study, and it is fascinating that really the key thing that Gottman came up with in a relationship, it really is the scan, is the body language, what's being said when when the husband or the wife or whoever the primary person is in the relationship, when they're speaking, it really is what the eyes and the body are doing that you can perceive whether or not the other person is listening to you. So this physical aspect of communication is very, very important. Again, small things speak volume. So not important to be greeted immediately by the person that you spoke to on the phone, okay? And if that person isn't right at the desk, say it's your scheduler is depending upon the layout of your desk, scheduler and placement of financial arrangements and how the front desk is laid out, which, you know, Richard, is a whole nother phone call. But if the person greeting you is not the person that you talk to on the phone, make sure that I meet that person on the phone. Okay? You spoke to Susie. She's right here. Susie puts out her hand and shakes my hand when I walk in the door. Oh, I'm so glad you're here. It was just so wonderful to talk to you on the phone. I need to connect with that same person. And so that's key. Without going into, you know, paperwork and that whole process, let's really talk about image. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, let's slide over beyond that person. Let's talk about what the image does for me in the practice. I'm looking around. I'm doing this scan. I'm looking at furniture. I'm looking to see, is it frayed? Is it from the 1970s? You know, what is the color? When has it been updated? It's amazing the update, the condition of the waiting room speaks volumes to me. You can be the most current CE candidate student in the world, but as a patient, I don't know that at this point in time. I just need to feel good in a very current and professional environment. Small things. How old are the magazines? Okay, that's a biggie. You know, I don't know what it is. There's always this big table in the middle of a waiting room when I walk in, and they're laid out so neatly. No one ever has them laid flat out on their coffee table or anywhere else in life other than the doctor's office. And nobody keeps their copies of their magazines from June 2007 and 2008. We all toss them, and we don't lay them out there. So that's really a biggie. I want current. I want popular magazines. I am going to have more magazines that speak to women because women, of course, buy the dentistry. They bring their kids there. We know that the numbers are higher. But I've also got to make sure that I have magazines for gentlemen, too. And those are generally auto magazines or outdoors magazines. Those really are the two genres that seem to work. Throw in a popular science there and we're good. But a rack that holds them, or if you're going to put them on the table, make sure that they are current. So that's really, those are two really critical things. Another image no-no is silk flowers. Okay. Silk flowers beyond 1 week in your home or anywhere have dust on them. But It's just the way they are. And I see silk flowers just everywhere. I know they're not real. Why would you put something that's not real there? You know, now you can buy fresh flowers every week. You have $5. You can do a small vase of fresh flowers right by your front desk. It speaks volumes to me.
They smell good, too, and I think that odors are very, very important. People have told me many times in my interviews, they said, oh, I just hate the smell of the dentist's office. And I don't know what
that's really...
Go ahead.
You are right on. You are absolutely right on. If I walk in and I smell the scent of roses or I see a beautiful orchid, just sensory, it just totally changes the channel for me. So get rid of the silks. Get something live in there, even something that I can talk about. How many times have you walked into a practice and there's been a big bouquet of flowers at the front desk with a card in them? And I've looked and I said, oh, someone's got something special happening today, and the front desk person, oh yeah, they are from my boyfriend, and that's really not the important part. The fact that I was drawn to these fresh flowers, and so this has just been proven over and over again. So I've got image, I've got the furniture, I've got current decor, I've got get rid of those dog-eared old magazines, make sure they're specific for the person that I am. Put some fresh flowers in there. And if you have children in your practice, provide a separate area for them to play. Even if you got to take out a couple of chairs, put a round table in the corner, something low where they can play and be to the, look forward to coming to the dentist. Basically, is what we want the kids to do. Have them look forward to going to the dentist. Because if they do, guess what? Mom is going to feel okay with it too. So those are four components. I actually have a whole image checklist, and where we have our patients walk around and our team will walk around and check up everything from what does the parking area look like, what does the entrance look like. If you're in a strip mall, one of the things that's really a problem is what the front entryway looks like. And I've actually had people say to me, doctors say to me, well, you know, I can't get the landlord to keep the front area clean. It's up to you. It's your practice. Go out and sweep in front of your little storefront, just like the man that owned the deli in your neighborhood when you were growing up swept his 25 feet across. Keep your area clean. Put down a special doormat. Stand apart. Stand apart in those first moments. Remember, opening that door to the dentist is not the easiest thing to do, especially at the first phone call. So you need to go above and beyond.
I know with high fear patients, they will visit your office sometimes once before they ever even have their visit. They just want to, they'll go to the parking lot or they'll go by your office before they actually have their appointment. It could be days before. So they're judging you and they're looking for reasons not to come in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree with that. The checklist that I have takes you again from the parking space all the way through the hallway to your door, opens the door for you. What is the patient seeing? Is there chipped formica at your front desk? I mean, these are little things that need big things. So walking around with a critical eye, and I do encourage you, if you have a friend or an ally or even a random patient, we're taking a survey of our facility. Could you take a minute, walk around with me, and tell me what you see? These are key things that can be done on a daily basis. I was recently in a practice doing an on-site, and it was very interesting to me that there was an important notice, okay, concerning the lights or the noise, something about the restroom, and I'm sorry it's escaping me right now, but there was something that I needed to know where the light switch was or something. But it was written on a post-it note and then taped around the post-it note. Now, what happens to a piece of paper by a light switch?
I guess it gets all dingy and messed up.
Yeah, it gets smudged and maybe the corner will roll up. And so here I had this state-of-the-art facility, and they wanted to write me a little note, and they put it on this shabby piece of paper. Okay, here I am talking to you about the shabby piece of paper. I can't remember what color the office is. I can't remember anything else about it. I remember this shabby piece of paper, just this little note by the light switch. So, again, small things mean big things.
Well, how do they mean big things? I mean, I fear this, and I'm sure you're right, but I'd like to – how does it mean? I mean, look, someone's coming to the dentist, and they've already come in, and they're going to hopefully get treatment. How is it that something like a smudgy post-it note or a chip for mica, how would that impact a decision to get dentistry?
You don't want to distract me in any way from the people that are there. Period, bottom line. You want to keep environment in my subconscious. you don't want to distract me out of that. You want to keep me observant of how people relate to one another, of what people are doing. I want to stay with the people. And that's really the most important thing. Don't distract me. Don't distract me. I came here. I want to feel safe. I want the people to be able to take care of me. So take care of these details for me.
So is that a dollars and cents thing, you think? I mean, is that really, I understand it, it sounds good, but is it really a matter of dollars and cents?
Oh, absolutely. Why on the earth would I give you, if you can't take care of small details, I'm not going to feel comfortable turning over my cash to you. I don't know that this is the right place for me.
Right.
I really don't.
So the dentist make it just lower case acceptance, and they'll never really know why.
And that's exactly right. It'll be those things. Because I won't speak to you about those things.
Yeah.
It's just the impression that you've made upon me.
Oh, have you had the situation, Kathy, in your vast experience where you've helped someone turn their office around just to physically, the physical layout, and seen an improvement in case acceptance?
Absolutely. We had a practice that, again, front desk environment, and again, I think it really deserves a separate call, but walking in again to this clinical environment is, again, becoming less and less popular. People know what you do. They know you're a dentist. They know that you have charts. They know there are, again, they know what you do. Walking into, at the front desk, we had a practice that really was having low case acceptance. What we did is we moved the furniture around. We put the charts behind closed doors. We put the person that, talks to the person on the phone, that greets the patient on the phone. We put them accessible. Again, that old shake hand greet thing. And really important is we took away all models and all things that looked like teeth from the initial from the waiting room. We took all that away so that the person felt like, not that they were quite in a salon, okay, there's a lot going on with spa dentistry. I don't need to go that far. But I really, again, am into patient comfort. Their new patient conversion grew. And interestingly enough, their new patients grew. And I would attribute that without a survey. We have just started doing patient surveys among my clients. Without a survey, I would speculate the reason their new patients grew was because of word of mouth. And again, speculation.
So that also not only helped them, you feel, get higher case acceptance, it helped them get more referrals.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, and the other piece of that, too, Richard, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. The other piece about that, that we really can't dismiss, because a lot of people are thinking about their team. They go, oh, okay, you know, change decor, okay, answer, you know, I don't know, Kathy. Well, one of the things that happens anytime we change something for our team is they get refreshed. They get changed. They also get encouraged. They go, oh, this is, you know, we're making things easier for me to do my job. And that's really a critical piece, too. What about the team? If you change the environment, improve the procedure for the patient, you are doing the same thing for your team members. You want, as you want the patient to be happy about being there, you really want your team to be happy being there. Again, remember, go back to my Mary Kay experience. I couldn't hire or fire them. You basically volunteered to be a salesperson. You're an independent contractor. If I wasn't able to offer you the motivation, the environment, the special events, the training, the sense of caring, even over the phone, you wouldn't have to stay. You wouldn't have to continue to, performing. And very much that same psychology goes on in any team and in dentistry. So a refresh is as important to your patient as it is to your team.
And so you're saying that some of this improvement in case acceptance and referrals may be the result of the team just doing better because they feel better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better, Richard.
And so now we're on that first visit. What else should be done? You've mentioned that the front desk should be away from that barrier that desk represents. They should be shaking hands with somebody. What else? How should that proceed in your experience?
Well, again, we talk about the handoff. Of course, we don't want the patient to be waiting in the waiting room, in your reception area. We don't want them to be waiting beyond completing whatever paperwork or final details that you have. We want someone from your clinical area to come out, of course, and escort your patient into the clinical area. I call this the journey to the inner sanctum, and this is probably the scariest point of any visit for a new patient. They're not sure they want to go back there. As bright as your facility is, as well equipped as your laboratory is, you know, this is a long, dark hallway to most people.
Well, I have a question. I have a question just before, if you wouldn't mind, Kathy.
Yeah.
I call this, I'm thinking about it some more, as like the clipboard shove.
Yeah, very good.
You know, there's all those papers, and they kind of like pass it over to me. I'm a patient, you know, and it's like not very friendly or inviting. I mean, is there anything that you suggest with regard to that sort of that experience or anything that's helpful for our listeners?
Well, the key is, you know, you've got to somewhere along the line exchange information with the assistant in the back. And, of course, you know, computers have done a wonderful service for us now. You know, we don't really need the clipboards. All of that can be accessible in the operatory. Any patient input that's done by the front desk can be available. So that doesn't have to be that way. But if you're not that technologically advanced, once that clipboard has been handed off, the important thing is remember that this is a long, dark hallway, so you want to break it up. There's a walk-through tour that's really key. The more people you can introduce me to or familiarize me with your physical plant, with your environment, the better chance you are, again, of making me feel comfortable. This is all about my comfort and my perception. You're really still working at making me your friend, telling me that I am the number one important person in the world. So what do I need to know? Okay, the first thing I need to know when I'm going to the back before I land in the operatory is I need to know where the restroom is. And this is a really interesting thing. The psychology of the restroom is very powerful. This is a place, believe it or not, it is a safe harbor in the practice. People will escape, ask for breaks. I'm sure every dentist has had someone interrupt work in somewhere along in the process saying, excuse me for a minute, I need to go to the restroom. Some people, again, attention span. Some people run in the door and they need to have that. So this is a place of tremendous first impression. I've walked into restrooms where there's actually been sterilizing equipment in the restroom. I know that sounds horrifying to people, but I have seen it. I have heard large noises behind a shower curtain. Something is going on back there that has to do with dentistry that I don't know. Your restroom speaks, again, it speaks volumes. Again, more fresh flowers, decor that's contemporary, immaculate. It doesn't take that much money to change fixtures and update them. Think of any home, you know, if you're going to sell your house, you change two things. You change the kitchen and you change the bathrooms. So, again, people are noticing this kind of thing. So that needs to be pointed out where the restroom is. Also, too, if you are introducing other people, make sure you're not pulling that person up and away from the patient. You might observe and talk in a softer manner. Softer manner is really key in practices. You really don't want, if I am being treated in one operatory, you don't put me in a position where I'm overhearing conversations elsewhere. You really want to keep me as the patient safe. But here I am, I'm just to the practice and I'm walking through. You want to avoid critical language. Happened to me recently, was visiting a practice and was given a tour and was pointed out how gentle the treatment is, and we don't do anything that's bloody here. I was actually told that on the new patient.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's horrifying, right? And I'm just recoiling and saying, oh, I'm really going to be here to do if anybody doesn't need to look.
I don't want to hear that word.
Be careful of what you say and what you don't
say. But they thought they were doing it right. They thought that was a good thing. They thought they were,
they absolutely did.
Yeah.
They absolutely did, that they were creating, you know, say, oh, you're not going to be cut today, you know.
Okay, so what's wrong with that? Let's just, you know, what's wrong with that?
Well, again, imagery. You know, if we get back to, you know, history, again, we're thinking perhaps when we're younger, I'm going to go to that point again. Dentistry has improved so much, and I'm sure the caliber of the people on the call, because I know who I invited and I know who you invited, Richard, people are going to be shaking their heads and go, oh, well, that doesn't happen in my practice. It does, because you're not here when the person is giving the tour. You're not standing by them.
Yes.
So this very simple training that I hope will happen after this call Monday morning, that you will sit down and say, let's talk about what happens when the new patient arrives in your in our practice. Would you, Susie, Janie, whoever it is, would you take us all on a tour as if we were new patients and get that person to practice and hear really what they're saying? That is really so important. You just would be dazzled. You just would be dazzled. Looking at what is being said and what should be said is just really important.
You're suggesting that that our listeners on Monday morning, they have a meeting, and that they use this time to role play the walkthrough of a typical patient. You have someone play a patient, and you just role play the whole thing. Is that what you're saying?